I will start from the very beginning of the Sedra. The mitzvah of Lech Lecha is considered one of the nisyonos of Avraham Avinu. Now, on the surface, it's a little difficult to understand what exactly the nisayon was, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu phrased the command, Lech Lecha. Rashi says, Lecha, L'tovoscha u'laha'anoscha, or L'haanoscha l'tovoscha, for your pleasure and your good. Let's first understand what that means. There are many things in this world that are good for you, but they're not pleasurable. I used to know that when my mother, Aleha Shalom, would say, eat your vegetables, they're good for you, that they didn't taste good. Because if they did, she wouldn't have to resort to the fact that they were good for me. And there are a lot of things in this world that are enjoyable and pleasurable that are not good for you. Here, the Rabbanu Shel Olam tells Avraham Avinu, I promise you. Okay, it's God talking, and Avraham knows that it's God talking. And God says, Lech Lecha, I promise you, that if you make this move, it's going to be for your good and your pleasure. Now, where's there a nisayon? If God came to me, and I knew it was God talking to me, no doubts, and he told me, look, go to Timbuktu, and I promise you it's going to be for your good and your pleasure, why shouldn't I go? What's a nisayon? That's the question. Where is there a nisayon if God promises him it's going to be for his good and his pleasure? Let's answer that first, and then we'll see how it fits into some of the psukim here that, without the idea I'm going to tell you, are very difficult to understand. The following question always bothered me, and until the following incident happened and made me understand why it's no question. Start with the question. The Torah, later on in Parshas Ekev, promises the following, or says the following. Ha'aretz asher ani mivi eschem shama lo ke'eretz Mitzrayim hi. It's right before they're ready to go into Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu is giving his final shiur, and he wants to, I guess, sell them on Eretz Yisrael. So he tells them, you're familiar with Mitzrayim, and the land I'm bringing you to is not like Mitzrayim at all. Because in Mitzrayim, you always had a readily available water supply. The Nile overflowed, and they had water for irrigation, water for drinking. No problem with water. But Ha'aretz asher ani mevi eschem shama, but the land I'm bringing you to, is limtar hashamayim tishtemayim. There is no readily available water supply in Eretz Yisrael unless it rains. There's no artificial irrigation. If it rains, there's water for drinking, for irrigation. If it doesn't rain, then there are droughts. Right? Didn't live through many years here where there wasn't any water. And you had to conserve, and there was no... Basically, I mean, now, Baruch Hashem, they've known how to save water, whatever, from year to year. But it used to be that if it didn't rain, the imams had nothing to drink. People would die of thirst. So I don't know, but it doesn't sound like the Rebbe Mishlom is a great salesman. If I heard that, I'd probably turn around and go back to Mitzrayim. What's the Rebbe Mishlom trying to do? Convince us that to go back to Mitzrayim? To speak badly about Eretz Yisrael? The land you came from, there was never a short of water. The Nile overflowed. You had readily available. But the land I'm bringing you to is a land that depends on rainfall totally. What's it mean? The same question you can ask about the following. The Nachash got a curse. Got a lot of curses. But one of the curses it got was the Ofer Tochal Kol Yemei Chayecha. You will eat dust all of your life. Now, Chazal knew that snakes don't eat dust because dust is not nutritious. And if snakes ate dust or earth, they die. So therefore, there are a few different pshat in what it means. One pshat is that the snake has no taste buds. And whatever it eats tastes like dust. That is a curse. That's a curse. You can't taste anything, and everything tastes the same like dust. There's another pshat, though, the Gemara says, of what the curse of the nachash was. And that is, wherever the nachash goes, its food supply will be readily available to it, just like the dust of the earth. Now, I don't know, but I wouldn't mind that curse. Don't have to worry. Wherever you are, your food supply will be readily available. You only have to open the refrigerator and it's full. You don't have to go shopping. You always will have a readily available food supply. That does not seem to me like a curse. I wouldn't mind it. And opposite that, Klal Yisrael in the Midbar had a bracha. They had one day's food supply at a time. They tried to save the man more than one day. It rotted. They woke up in the morning like old Mother Hubbard. The cupboards were bare, and if there wasn't man, they wouldn't have nothing in the house. And that was a great bracha. I never understood this until the following maisa happened, true maisa. And if you remind me before I go on, I will tell you what the end of the maisa is, because I usually forget, and then you're spending the rest of the time thinking about that and not listening to me. What happened was the following. I used to be a rabbi in Miami many years ago. And one of my balabatim was a woman who was a teacher in the local public high school. She taught Hebrew in the public school system in Miami. At the time, Hebrew was accepted as a second language. Now, in Miami, English is accepted as a second language. In any case, so she taught Hebrew. And a lot of her students, obviously, were Jewish, right? Who wants to take Hebrew? Mostly Jews. So she called me one day, and she said, I have a 17-year-old Jewish student who has tried to commit suicide twice unsuccessfully, and we're afraid he's going to try again, and none of the teachers here or guidance counselors can get through to him. Maybe you want to try to save a Jewish life. I said, bring him in. We'll see what can I do. So she brought this boy into me. I never saw a sadder-looking human being in my life. He looked like the world had come to an end. I didn't know about it, but he did. So I said to him, what could have happened in your short 17 years that make you look so sad and depressed, like the world came to an end? What could be so terrible that happened to you? He said, Rabbi, I'll tell you. He said, I have grown up with my father alone because my mother abandoned us when I was an infant. I never knew my mother. I don't know who she is. She ran away, and I never met her. I grew up with my father. My father is a very wealthy man, and he raised me till today. Now, I surmise that what happened is the following, based on the events of the last few weeks. My father met a woman that he wants to marry. And the woman must have told him that she will only marry him on the condition that I am not in the picture, because she doesn't want a 17-year-old cramping her style. So my father called me in a few weeks ago, and he said that he has some surprises for me. First surprise, he took out of his right-hand pocket a set of keys. He said that these are keys to a condominium fully furnished, fully paid for, that I bought for you in a yuppie neighborhood in Miami. It's yours. Enjoy it. And he gave me the keys. After that, he took out another set of keys from his left-hand pocket. And he said, you need transportation. These are keys to a very fancy sports car that's fully paid for. It's yours. You need transportation. Enjoy your car. Gave me the keys. And then he took a credit card out of his wallet, and he said, this credit card is for clothing, food, entertainment, whatever within reason I can afford it. put it on the credit card, I will pay the bill. You need food, clothing, whatever. He said, just one thing. It's been nice knowing you. Don't call me. I won't call you. Don't come to visit. I won't come to visit you. This is the end of the road. It's been nice knowing you. From now on, goodbye. Shook my hand, and that was it. Now, I was much younger at the time, and I thought to myself, if I was 17 years old, and I had my own apartment, my own car, and unlimited credit, I don't really think I'd be suicidal. I think I'd be pretty happy. So I felt like telling this young man, you know, everybody in this world has their package of tzoras. You have your package of tzoras, I have my package of tzoras, let's trade. You give me your tzoras, your apartment, your credit card, and your car, I'll give you my tzoras. If those are that's what you're depressed about, right, I'd be glad to take it off your hands. Then I realized that every time that boy lived in that apartment, used the car or the credit card, it reminded him that nobody wanted him, that he was totally unloved and rejected, and that is the biggest curse in the world. That's the curse of the Nachash. The Rabbanu Shlom told the Nachash, there have to be Nachashim in this world. But I don't want to have anything to do with you. So I am providing your food supply till the end of time. But I don't want to have anything to do with it. So, goodbye. Here's your food supply. Enjoy it. But you don't have any relationship with me. Same thing with Mitzrayim. The Rabbanu Shalom put Mitzrayim on a Shabbos clock called the Nile. It overflows on a cycle, cyclically. The Rabbanu Shalom Kibiyachol doesn't have anything directly to do with the water supply of Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim has to exist, but I wouldn't have nothing to do with it. Eretz Yisrael lives on rain. Rain is one of the keys that HaKadosh Baruch Hu holds for himself. He gives to no shliach. We may not have as much water here as there is in Mitzrayim, but we have, as the Torah says in the next pasuk, Eretz asher einei Hashem Elokecha ba mereishis hashana va'arach rishana. It's a land that has a constant connection, a constant relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You may not have as much water or as much food, but you have a direct, intimate, close relationship with Hashem. That's a bracha. Klal Yisrael, every single day, we're reminded that the Rabbanu Shem wants to provide for them. And the Nachash got its food supply till the end of time, and the Rabbanu Shem totally disassociated himself from it. That's the biggest klala. Yes? Yes, but if you know that you've been rejected, if this boy, right, constantly called his father and his father hung up on him, right, but it was a one-way relationship in a way that the other side really wasn't interested in any relationship and didn't reciprocate, it's not really a relationship. It's a fantasy.
But it's a little easier to do a one-way relationship with
Hashem. What?
It's a little easier to do a one-way relationship with
Hashem. You can fool yourself easier with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because he's not there to hang up. Yeah?
Well, what happened to the boy?
Thank you for reminding me. Lamaisa, I looked into his background, and I found out that he was adopted. And he wasn't Jewish. He was Catholic. His father was Jewish. But his mother wasn't really his mother. That's probably why she ran away. They adopted him, and she decided that she didn't want him. In any case, so he was Catholic. So I called the Catholic services in Miami, and I told them of this story, and I asked them, could they find him a nice Catholic family to be his foster parents? And they did. They found a very nice family who wanted to have a teenage boy in the house. And before I left Miami, which was about a year or two after this, I checked up on him, and I found that he was very happy with these foster parents, and he still had his car and his apartment and the credit card. This guy had the best of it. He wasn't committing suicide anymore. In any case, that is why there's a Nisoyan in Lech Lecha, because Eretz Yisrael is a great land. It's pleasurable and it's good, but you have to have the right outlook. Because if your outlook is the more food, the better, then Eretz Yisrael may not look so pleasurable or so good. But if your outlook is the more intense your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the better, then Eretz Yisrael is good and it's pleasurable. In order to see the good and pleasurable of Eretz Yisrael, you have to have the right outlook on life, the right values, standards. What's important to you has to be what's really important and not what you fool yourself into thinking. Otherwise, Eretz Yisrael can be to what one person, Eretz Yisrael is a tremendous benefit, to somebody else, it's a terror. Depends what you're looking for. It says later on in the Torah that Eretz Yisrael is Eretz Asher Lo Sechsar Kol Bo. Eretz Yisrael is missing nothing. Now today, that may be true. But when I came to Eretz Yisrael about 28 years ago, some of the very basics of life didn't exist here, like Hellman's mayonnaise, like General Mills breakfast cereals, like Star-Kissed tuna. People used to bring these on their lifts to last them for the next 20 years, right? Cases and cases of Star-Kissed tuna and Hellman's mayonnaise, because how could an American exist here on what the poor excuse for mayonnaise that was Israeli, or the poor excuse for tuna fish? I remember what that was, and it was a very poor excuse. And or ketchup, they didn't have Heinz ketchup here either. And what they called ketchup was, I don't know what, somebody stepped on a tomato and it ended up in the, in any case. So how in the world could the Torah have the chutzpah to say that Eretz Yisrael is missing nothing? Now, maybe, but not 28 years ago. The answer, I think, is the following. There's a medrash that says the following. Reb Shimon bar Yochai had a kollel. He had people learning full-time under him. And one of his talmidim went to Chutz Laretz and became rich. Came back to Eretz Yisrael and he came to visit his friends. And they see this guy has a nice car and a big cigar and a fat wallet. And he went to Chutz Laretz for a few years. Sounds great. So they all decided that they're going to do the same thing. And Reb Shimon bar Yochai realized he's going to lose his whole kollel. So he said, today, close the Gemaras, we're going on a tiyul. He took them out into a valley, and he said, valley, valley, fill up with gold coins. And the whole valley filled up with gold coins. He says, you want money? You don't have to go to Chutz Laretz to get money. Plenty of money here. Just go and take whatever you want. And they all started to run. He said, wait a second, I forgot something. Come back. He said, keep a record of what you take. Because later on, when they take it off your Olam Haba, you'll want to have something to check it against to make sure they didn't take too much off, that they took exactly what you took. They all decided maybe they don't need the money. And they went back to sit and learn. I think the lesson is, Eretz Yisrael is missing nothing. And if you think it's missing something, maybe you don't need it. Maybe what you think it's missing is not really something you need. If you have the right outlook on life and know what you really need for what really is important in life, maybe that's not what you need. Maybe you don't need Hellman's mayonnaise in order to be able to be a real Eved Hashem. And believe me, people can fool themselves into thinking what they really need for the right purposes when they're fooling themselves and they don't really need it for the right purposes. They need it perhaps for, if anything, part of a purpose, is not necessarily the right purposes. I remember when I was in Miami, there, having a swimming pool is not something that only very rich people could have. Everybody, even the average people have swimming pools. At the time, there was no place that you could go separate swimming. And if you wanted to swim in the summer, and it was very hot there, right, especially for children, you had to have your own pool. So when we bought our second house in Miami, we had more children, so we needed a bigger house. We looked for a house with a pool. And I convinced myself that to really be a real Eved Hashem, you have to have a swimming pool. Because without a swimming pool, you're really not Meyushav, and it's good for Kiddush Hashem, and we'll invite people for a separate swimming, who would normally go mixed swimming, and it's going to be a real Kiddush Hashem, the swimming pool. And then we moved to Eretz Yisrael, and here we did not have a swimming pool, except in the winter when it leaked into our living room. The living room became a swimming pool. And I suddenly discovered that you could be a real Eved Hashem without a swimming pool. So you can convince yourself of things that you absolutely need, which you don't really need if you'd have the right perspective on life. Yes?
It doesn't say what you need there, because what you're missing. It says Eretz Yisrael has anything that isn't missing anything.
Right. It's not missing anything that you really need that should be part of your life.
Does it say that, or does it just say that?
What? And if there are things that you can't get here, right, that you have to leave Eretz Yisrael to get, it's because something's missing in you, not necessarily in the land. The land can provide if you deserve it. Yeah?
Well, I do understand and agree with the concept that, like, you know, you don't need so much and stuff like that. I still sometimes have trouble with it because, like, why does so much of, like, being an Eved Hashem have to be associated with deprivation?
It doesn't have to be.
Like,
that's not the intention. That's not the intention. But it's not, it's another topic. Okay, I will find a way, perhaps even next week, of fetching it into the parasha so I can answer the question. Okay, it doesn't. That's not the intention. A person can live a fine Torah life and be rich, and he should be, and should enjoy. There's a Yerushalmi that says that a person is going to be brought to din, l'asid lavo, on everything in this world he could have enjoyed and didn't. So that doesn't sound like deprivation. It's a different idea completely, but it needs an entire class. Okay, I'm not going to even attempt to answer it. I'll regurgitate it. Okay? But that is not the intention. Okay. Because if that was the intention, that we should all be living in caves, not have phones, electricity, refrigerators, right, and live really a life of deprivation, and that's like a monk. That's Christianity. It's not Judaism. Just take my word for it. That's not the intention. What the intention is, we'll save for another time. Okay. Now, if that's the case, then you can understand the following. First of all, lech lecha me'artzecha mimoladetecha umibeis avicha. All the Mepharshim ask the wrong order. First you leave beis avicha, then you leave moladetecha, your birthplace. First you leave your father's house, then the city where you were born, and then the country. You don't leave the country, and then the city, and then your father's house. So why is it in the opposite order? The answer is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not telling Avram merely to make a geographic change, but to change his entire outlook, values, priorities. And therefore, the first thing you do is Artzecha, the general mores of the country. More difficult is the place where you were born. You're attached to the ideas of your birthplace. And the hardest thing is your father's house, to leave those ideas. We're not talking about leaving a place. That's only part of the Torah, part of the Nesoyim. The main thing is leaving the ideas that that place represented. And since the ideas are in the right order, which also explains the next thing. Did it ever bother you? Torah says like this, after HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avram to go, he goes. Vayelech Avram. Kasher diber elov Hashem, vayelech itolot, v'Avram ben chomesh shonim v'shivim shonah b'tseisom michoron. Goes, takes Lot with him, and he's 75 years old. What's the next pasuk? Vayikach Avram esora yishto, v'yes Lot ben achi, v'yes korechu shoma shirachoshu, v'yes hanefesh asherosu b'choron, v'yetsu loleches arza kanan, v'yavo arza kanan. Avram takes Sarai and Lot and all of his possessions and all the people that he made believers, and they leave to go to Eretz Canaan. How many times did he leave? The pasuk before said he went. What happened now? What's the next pasuk? Vayikach Avram Sarai Ishto. It says Vayelech Avram. So maybe we could say Avram left with Lot the first time. They're on the road, and Avram says, we forgot something. I can't put my finger on it. We didn't lock the door. We didn't turn off the gas. Something we forgot. Then it hits him. Sarah. He runs back. Vayikach Avram es Sarah ishto, and he took Sarah. That obviously is not what happened. So, what's the meaning of the psukim? The answer, I think, is the following. The first pasuk tells me that Avram listened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and geographically picked himself up and left Haran to go to Eretz Yisrael. That's the first pasuk. It doesn't mention anybody but him and Lot, because it doesn't have to. If Avram left a place, of course Sarah went with him. Avram and Sarah are one. Ishto kigufo ba'al. It doesn't have to tell me Avram went and he took Sarah. Of course he took Sarah. Sarah and Avram are one person. It doesn't have to tell me he took his students, because students are like children. You don't leave your children. It doesn't have to tell me that he took all his possessions, because a person's money is an extension of him. So of course he took his possessions. So that's all included in Vayelech Avram. Avram went. Who's Avram? Sarah, his students, his possessions. Who is not included in Avram? Lot. He didn't have to take his nephew. So the Torah tells us, not only did Avram go, Avram meaning Sarah, students, possessions, Lot also went. What's the next pasuk? They went, all of them. Next pasuk says, Vayikach Avram. Rashi says throughout the Torah, wherever it says, kicha, to take a human being, it does not mean to take him by the hand. It's the first place is in Bereshit. Vayikach Avram es ha'od asher asa vayanicheo b'gan Eden. Says Rashi there. He didn't take him by the hand and place him in Gan Eden. Koch oso bidvarim. He took him with words. He convinced him that this is a good place for him. You don't take a human being by the hand, because then you're only taking his body. You have to convince him. So whenever it says, kaches alaviyim, kochein bidvarim, convince them, speak to them. Ki yikach ish isha, doesn't mean he knocks her over the head and drags her by her hair into a cave. It means that he says something. Harei at mekudeshes, he has to say something. He has to speak to her about marriage. That's what we learn, that a person has to say something when he gets married to a woman. Or, what's it called? The many places in the Torah. Kaches Aaron. With words. Therefore, what happened is like this. They all went. And they were now traveling to physically change their place from Haran to Eretz Yisrael. Avram got them all together. Everybody. And he said, the Rabbanu Shalom is not interested only that we change our position physically, geographically. But he wants us to get different ideas, perspectives, goals, morals, values, standards. And that is Vayikach Avram es Sarah Ishto. Now he spoke to them and told them that they're going to have to change their entire, outlook. And that included Rechusham Asher Rechashu, which is the Avodim and Shvachos, the slaves that they owned also. Yes?
Well, then, how come Lot included it the second time? Because Lot didn't get convinced by his words. He didn't become like Avram.
He tried. Avram, for sure, tried to impress Lot. He wasn't successful. He was successful partially. Lot Lemaisa lived an external from life, except he succumbed to his inner passions. But Avram tried to. Vayikach Avram es Lot ben Ochi. He also tried to convince him. He gave him the same shear. Sarai listened, right?
Okay.
And Lot didn't. No, Vayikach means he took him with words. Okay? He convinced him. But he convinced him maybe temporarily, and Lot went back. Avram did his part in trying to convince Lot. That's called Vayikach. Right? And it's possible for a person, ki yikach ish isha, can mean that a man can say aret mekudeshesli, but if the woman takes the ring and throws it back in his face, she's not married. She decided that, you know, maybe I'm not interested. Okay. So that is this parsha. Okay, next. Did Avram pass this Nisayin? L'chora from Pirkei Avos, it says that Avram was omeid b'chol anisyonos. Right? Omad b'kulam. Yet, the Ramban says, famous Ramban, that when Avram went to Mitzrayim, chota chet gadol b'shogeg. He put his wife in danger, and he made a terrible sin b'shogeg, unintentionally, and that's why we were made slaves in Mitzrayim. Not why we were made slaves, but why specifically Mitzrayim. Now this Ramban is a very difficult Ramban, and it has a source in the Zohar. So it seems like Avraham Avinu failed this test. He should have not left Eretz Israel, he should have stayed there, not gone to Mitzrayim, put his wife in danger. So why does it say that Avraham Avinu was omated with all the nisyonos? Omad bekula, he passed all the tests. So there are various answers. I think that perhaps the answer is the following. The only problem with my answer is it doesn't fit very easily into the words of the Ramban. That's the only problem with it. But I think that it explains the Zohar at least. And it, if you want to kvetch a little bit, it could fit into the Ramban too. And that's the following. The test of Avram, God said, I'm sending you to Eretz Israel, l'tovos chol anoscha, and right away there's a famine only in that land, nowhere else, to the point where they can't exist. And Avram has students, he has a nephew, he has a wife, who he's responsible for. If Avram Avinu would have been alone, he would have said, I'll stay in Eretz Israel and starve. But you can't be a tzaddik on somebody else's cheshbon. I'll stay in Eretz Israel and my students will starve. And my wife will starve. That you can't do. So he had to leave. The halacha is that if you don't have what to eat, you can leave Eretz Israel. It may not be a midas chasidus. That was the problem with Elimelech. But that's when you're only responsible for yourself. Not when you're responsible for your family and for your students or whatever. So he had to leave. He had to leave. No problem. The test wasn't would he leave Eretz Yisrael. Would he leave and have tainas on the Ribbono Shel Olam? You promised me l'tovos l'anoscha, and now I see this land is the only land amongst all the other ones that have a famine, and I have to leave. That's tovosi and l'anosi. He didn't complain. He didn't question the Ribbono Shel Olam. I accept the fact that Ribbono Shel Olam gamzu l'tova. This is also l'tova. He passed that test. Leaving Eretz Yisrael wasn't the problem. In my estimation, the problem was where he went. Avraham Avinu was concerned that he'd get out of a physical danger, starvation. It's a real danger, and you have to do your ishtadlus to avoid starving. Where does he choose to go? To Mitzrayim, where there is a spiritual danger. That means that Avraham Avinu considered the physical danger more real than the spiritual danger. That was the chait. The chait was not that he didn't pass the test. He passed the test. He had to leave Eretz Yisrael, he didn't complain, and he didn't question. But his choice of where to go, that was a separate sin. How can you take yourself out of physical danger and put yourself in spiritual danger? Godel ha-machtiu yosef me'ahargo. Causing somebody to sin is worse than killing them. It would be better to die of a famine than to end up, what's it called, making your wife be taken and forced to commit adultery, which is what he was afraid of. That's okay. And leaving Eretz Israel, right, because you're afraid you're going to starve, perfectly okay. But why aren't you afraid that you're going to spiritually starve in Mitzrayim? Pick somebody else to go. Don't go to Mitzrayim. You want to save yourself physically, don't put yourself in spiritual danger. Sometimes people do the same thing with their children. You know, I want to make sure that my child is taken care of and has a parnos or whatever, and they send them to places where they are in danger of being lost spiritually in order to be saved financially. Fine. You want to take care of you're concerned about your children's financial status in the future, but don't send them to a place where you're putting their ruchnius in danger. Send them to some place where that won't be a problem. But if you're so concerned about the future, of physical future of your children, you should be at least as concerned about the spiritual future of your children. And when it comes to the physical things, the Rebbeim Shem takes care. When it comes to spiritual things, there Hakol Bidei Shemayim Chutz Miyir Shemayim. So you can't say, well, Mirtz Hashem, everything will be okay. You could say that about the Parnassah. You can't say that about the Ruchnis, about the Yerushalayim. So that was the chait, the shogeg of Avraham Avinu. And it wasn't that he left Eretz Yisrael. It's where he chose to go. And that's why we were Avadim in Mitzrayim specifically. Because it was the Mitzrayim part that was the problem. Not so much that he left Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Which brings us to the next thing. What was Avram thinking? Right? Yeah. It could be that the nature of the Yetzer Hara of Mitzrayim was only Arayas. And the only one that Avram was really concerned about was Sarah, who in the end, that was the one they took. Now, the problem is, how did Avram decide he's going to solve this problem? He realized he has a beautiful wife who is white compared to the darker-skinned Mitzrim, and therefore she is something of a surprise to them, and something unusual, and therefore she is considered a prize. So he's afraid that somebody's going to take her and commit adultery or kill him. So big problem. He comes up with this great idea. Okay, say you're my sister. That way they'll give me presents. And they won't kill me. Only one problem, they still may take you and commit adultery, but, you know, we can't solve everything. So at least he saves his own skin. Does it make any sense? That is Avraham Avinu. He's found a plan that will save his skin, even though his wife's going to suffer, but, you know, can't take care of everything. What does it mean? And it says, L'man yitav li ba'avurech, Rashi says, sheyitnu li matanos, they'll give me presents. That solves the problem. They're not going to kill me, they'll give me presents, everything's okay. Aye, they'll take you, okay, you know. What's the meaning of the psukim? They never bother him? What Avraham Avinu's, what was he thinking? So the Sfarno, the Ramban, say a beautiful pshat. I'm going to enhance it a little bit, but it's basically what they say. Avraham Avinu made the following cheshbon. They don't say all of what I'm telling you, but that's basically the intent. Avraham Avinu made the following cheshbon. The people of the time were not out-and-out thugs. They basically listened to Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. They were law-abiding people, except where they could do things and get their way and do it in a permissible way, they did. But when they couldn't get their way permissibly, then they did something awesome. They were not that moral that they would hold themselves back from getting what they wanted, taiva-wise, even if it meant doing something awesome. But if they could do it in a permissible way, they did it permissible. Okay, that's the case. Avraham made the following cheshbon. Let's see first what they're going to do. There's two averas over here. They can take Sarah, leave me alive, and live with her, and that's one avera of adultery. That's also to a ben Noah, living with somebody else's wife. Or they can kill me, and then you're not an Eish HaZish anymore. You're an almana. You're a widow. Now it's okay to live with you. Okay? So, but they are over another avera called murder. Which would they rather do? They are not going to not take you. They want you. They're going to get you by hook or by crook. So that's out of the question. So now the question is, which of the two averas are they going to do? Are they going to take you and leave me alive and be over the Isser of Gilead Arayas? Or are they going to kill me, take you after I'm out of the picture? Avraham said, they probably would rather kill me and then take you than take you with me alive. Why? Because if they leave me alive, then every time they live with you is another sin. And if they kill me, it's a one-time thing, and after that, there's no more sin. So they'd rather be over one sin once than constantly have to sin. So what they're probably going to do is kill me and then take you. Therefore, let's do the following. Let's say you're my sister. Now they don't have to kill me to get you permissibly. All they have to do is convince me to give over your hand in marriage, because there's no father over here, so they go to the older brother, and they speak to the brother about Shidduchim. Now they can get you in a permissible way. They don't have to take you against your will. They can marry you. So what's going to happen? All these people want you. So they're going to vie for your hand. And I'm going to stall them. I'm going to say, well, you want my sister, let's see what you're willing to offer. And they'll give me presents. And in the end, we will stall long enough that the famine will be over, and one night we will just get out of here, and you will be saved, and I will be saved, and there won't be any problem. And it worked every single time, except for two, the two the Torah speaks about. It didn't work by Avimelech, and it didn't work by Paro, because everybody else vied for her hand in a permissible way, because it's not nice to just take somebody by force, except for the king. The king could take who he wants. And they didn't take in consideration that Paro is going to get involved with Rabbi Melech. So that's why Avraham said, everywhere we went, we did this ploy. And it worked, everywhere, except by Avimelech and by Paro. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense. Avraham tried it by Paro, and it didn't work. And then he did it again by Avimelech? Didn't learn his lesson? And the answer is, he did it everywhere, and everywhere it worked, except by Paro and except by Avimelech. Because when the kings got involved, they didn't have to wait to vie for hand and convince Avraham to give her up for marriage. They take what they want, and that's what happened. But Avraham's plan was to save both of them. They're not going to take you in a way that's prohibited. If they think it's permitted, then they'll do it in a way that's permissible. If they think you're not an Eishes Ish, they don't have to kill me. But they're not going to take you by force. They will vie for your hand, and we'll stall, and then that'll be our Ishtadlus, and by the time we stall enough, the famine will be over, and we'll get out of here. And that's it. Yes. If he could have, he would have, but obviously couldn't.
And also, was it permissible for him to take his presents?
The what?
Was it permissible for him to take his presents?
It says later on, Avraham Avinu gave up those presents. He never had any enjoyment from them. But it was pikuach. It was pikuach nefesh. He didn't steal. There's a shiloh that you're allowed to steal to save your life. Pashtus, you are allowed, but you have to pay back. But if somebody gives something willingly, under false pretenses, right, and it's your life or that, then for sure you're allowed to take that. But Avraham, in the end, gave those matanos in Parshas Chayisara to his Bnei Apilagshim. Those were the matanos that he gave. I hear. It could be he did. I don't know. Could be he did. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not familiar. I'll take a look and see. I don't remember. Could be, but it could be that Sarah didn't agree with the plan.
Right?
But the way Avraham planned it, it would have saved both of them. It's just a matter of stalling. Yeah. Because Chazal say that Avimelech was a tzaddik. Paro wasn't a tzaddik. So he assumed that Avimelech is not going to do this. But Avimelech, Lemaisa, was enticed with Sarah's tzidkus, and she wasn't a married woman, so why not? He is the king. I think that was the difference.